This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Business Masterclass, the first half of the business skills conversation. We're going to be chatting with Gerwin Voss, partner at Nolans Johannesburg. Welcome, Gerwin.
Thank you very much, and thanks to all the listeners. Thanks for having me.
Last week, we chatted to Charles Kutzer on the principle of talent pipeline management and talent management. So this week, we're going to be talking a little bit about tax and regulatory compliance and all the different issues that you have to deal with in that space. So, Gerwin, I guess, you know, they always say the principle of death and taxes. These are the two certain things in life. But I think when you say the word tax in the world of an SME, I think everybody just their eyes glaze over and they go, oh no, not that stuff. But I think it's a very important part of our world, and the reality is, no matter what you do, no matter who you are, you need to make sure that you've got this part of your business sorted, no matter how big or small you are, because the reality is everybody falls within the net, so to speak.
As
Pravin Gordhan would say, everybody falls within the tax net. And yeah, we've even seen even our good president falls within the tax net in terms of expectations. So let's just start off. I think a good place to start is just to talk about the different types of income tax you have for different size entities, because I think that often catches people out. I mean, we start on the small end. I mean, something as simple as turnover tax, for example.
Yeah.
And then kind of the different stages as a business grows. Let's just talk about very simply some of the taxes that might be involved from an income tax perspective.
Okay, well, yeah, just to start on that as well, and I think you're saying as well, a lot of the times, you know, the eyes just glaze over, or death and taxes, and you almost, you get a fright, and I think you die before you even pay the return. You know, from a very basic perspective, I think there's a lot of space, actually, to actually get allowances back. As you start as a business, I think from the very beginning, like you were alluding to, turnover tax, I think that's where you would start. If your annual turnover is below R1 million, uh-huh, you're actually allowed to register for this turnover tax. The reason being, it just simplifies a lot of matters. Being in terms of that, for example, now, you know, you don't have any VAT or PAYE to pay, you only pay a percentage of your turnover.
Uh-huh.
That's if you're a very small entity.
Now, just give me a sense. I mean, what does that mean in terms of, I mean, you know, we say we're out there to simplify, and a lot of people will say, well, we say that, but what does it actually mean in rands and cents? I mean, if I was to look at a company, for example, if I was registered, if I had a small company and I was registering for turnover tax, let's assume, I mean, I did some numbers here based on some of the figures that you've sent me.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm seeing numbers here where it says, you know, in an example, if you were a company earning 600,000 rand per annum in terms of taxable income under turnover tax, you'd be paying, if I'm not mistaken, about what, 3,000 rand on that in terms of 3,600 rand.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you were doing the same thing in a company, just the company tax would be 168,000 rand. Now that's a massive difference in tax.
You see, the thing is, though, as well, and I think that's where a lot of taxpayers get the fright, and I think that's, you almost need to know how to apply the rules.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's trying to play a sport like any, you know, and if you don't know the rules that you're playing with and where to fit in, you end up paying a lot more tax than you really need to. For example, if you're a small entity or a small to medium-sized enterprise starting out, you can elect to be a small business corporation.
Okay.
Now, if you're a small business corporation, the tax you're going to pay and the tax burden's a lot less than if you were just a normal entity, like a listed entity, paying tax at a flat rate of 28%.
Okay.
However, you need to be aware of this. So when you're completing your tax return, so I would ask you on the tax return, look, are you a small business corporation as defined? Now, a lot of business owners, when you start out, you know, all this jargon, almost, you know, you're not familiar with it, you're not away with it, you wouldn't tick the box. If you tick the right box and you say, look, you know, I'm a small business corporation, then you start paying tax at a reduced rate.
Okay.
Now, these are all incentives that SARS put in place to actually help the economy to grow and to get things kick-started in the right way. However, if you're not aware of these, I think, you know, you're paying too much tax by default.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, from SARS's side, you know, they'll put the measures in place, but they're not the ones who are going to walk behind you and remind you, oh no, look, remember, you're a small business corporation, pay less tax. You only have tax of R1 million. Oh no, you know, apply for turnover tax. They may need to make sure that you're complying, that you are paying, and they'll make sure that they'll earn, you know, the money that they need to run the country. where I'd recommend in a situation like that, potentially get the help of a representative tax professional to help you out as well. And I think, like for example, the finance team, get the guys, you know, on the team that's actually going to help you and show you the rules, you know, as you're starting out. Because I think the guys almost tend to leave it. You're so busy running your business and making sure, you know, that from an entrepreneurial spirit that the business is running, you forget that these legislative measures need to be taken care of as well. And it helps from a working capital perspective. I mean, if you get this money back that the government allows you to, I mean, that's, you know, from my side, why I'm so passionate about tax as well, is because there's actually a lot of measures in place to help you. You just need to know where to look.
Well, I guess, yeah, so two things come to me from that conversation. The first is your comment, make sure you're using competent professionals to advise you.
Definitely.
And I think, first to say, that's we say this time and time again on the show, make sure that you have a working understanding of what the issues are, but get the advice from the professionals, as you say. It's critical, particularly in the area of tax. The other thing that strikes me is that no matter what you do in the world of tax, the reality is you need to follow the rules and follow the rules very carefully. So
definitely,
if you don't have a very clear understanding of what those rules are, or there's any opaqueness in terms of your interpretation of results or capability, make sure that you get rid of that vagary by getting the right advice, asking the questions, answering the questions correctly. Because that's the other thing I've seen is...
No, very true. I mean, especially having here, you know, it's a case, especially with tax, and I've seen this with clients before, is, you know, the mistakes can cost you dearly. It's not a case where if you're a day late, so it's going to be like, you know, sorry, we understand, and... You know, whereas with a supplier, you could maybe negotiate terms. SARS, you know, if you don't have your VAT return in as a manual return file, for example, by the 25th of that month, if you're late, you have a penalty. They're not going to waive the penalty unless you do a voluntary disclosure program and go for a whole lot of steps. But the penalties are real and concrete. You have to make sure that these things are in place and that you pay at the right rates as well.
I must just say the one thing that I've experienced is where you do your returns, etc., on time.
Yeah.
And payments have to be made timeously, etc. And something goes wrong, particularly in the world of banking.
Yes.
And payments are late. I will not name the bank, but I had a scenario where a payment was meant to go through, and for some reason there was a rejection of a batch on the banking platform.
Yeah.
And, of course, SARS said, you know, we're going to levy penalties and interest were in question.
Right.
And we actually went to the bank to say, but we know this thing was approved. The funds were cleared and available. Why did this payment reject? And they went through and they looked in their systems and they came back and they said, yeah, look, there's a little thing about how we do this payment process. And there are some, and it fundamentally boiled down to, it was a timing issue, and they don't make it very clear, and they didn't make it very clear to clients that there was almost like a sequence in which you had to work. And if you were out of their sequence, well, then your batch just rejected, and it wasn't clear that the batch had rejected until after the deadline.
Yeah.
And I said to the bank, well, I'm sorry, I'm not paying this penalty. And they said, oh, no, don't worry. We'll give you a letter to send to SARS. And I'm thinking, yeah, like, this is going to work.
Yeah.
And then the statement was made, I'll just send you, I just need some details to fill in on the template, was the word used. And I went, template? You mean this happens often? And the guy said, yeah, no, this happens all the time. And I thought to myself, sure, that's quite an indictment on the process. That, you know, we have all of these systems and processes in place and deadlines, etc. But it also does show you that if something does go wrong, take the right advice, spend the time investigating why it went wrong. Don't just instantly pay the penalty and say, well, you know, 10% penalty or whatever it may be, you know, I'm just going to write the check. Always make sure you get all your facts right, because, in some cases you may not be at fault, and the receiver of revenue and the banks seem to have a very comfortable relationship of if it is an error somewhere else in the system, as long as it's not you, the taxpayer, who's made this error,
yes.
They seem to be quite relaxed about fixing the problems. I guess reality, they've got to deal with a system that's not perfect, and everybody's got to deal with the challenges.
I think the problem, you know, or the solution would be, exactly like you're saying, know the channels to follow. Mm-hmm. And we've had clients before in practice where, you know, we've saved them on penalties and interest by doing voluntary disclosure programs, mm-hmm. and which is a process SARS allows. If you disclose what's gone wrong, provided it's not been due to an audit and SARS has actually caught the mistake out, if you actually, as a business owner, come to them and say, look, honestly, I've made a mistake on the return, for example, for VAT or PAYE, and you resubmit, the penalties and interest gets waived. If you know which processes to follow and the channels to follow, I think that's very important. And again, have the right guys in your corner or know, you know, who to go and see when you have a situation like that. That's definitely what you want to look out for.
Okay. Now, let's get back to this whole question of, okay, so turnover tax, I just did some quick numbers. I went,
yeah.
So if I have a turnover of, in your example, say, 600,000 rands worth of turnover, that gives me a taxable or tax payable of 3,650 rand.
Yeah.
If I was paying that at the 28% tax rate, that means I would have about 13 odd thousand rands worth of taxable income. Now, if you think about that, 600,000 rands worth of turnover only generating 13,000 rands worth of taxable income, that's probably improbable.
Yeah.
So the reality is turnover tax really, really gives you that leg up in terms of a small business. And then small business tax, what sort of rates are we looking at there?
Well, in terms of small business corporations, if you're looking at those rates, I mean, again, it's very similar almost to an individual. If you're starting, you've got progressive rates. So it wouldn't be just a flat rate of 28%. It depends in which category you fall from zero to, you know, the various categories that you've got. But the big thing on that as well is you get certain allowances which help you out as a small business corporation. For example, you've got depreciation allowances accelerated. Mm-hmm. If you've got plant and machinery.
So when we talk depreciation allowances, let's just define what that is. So
These are the good things.
These are the good things, yes. Big words.
So you want to have as many allowances as you can claim as possible. These are, you know, you're claiming these back for tax. So SARS will always say, like, this is your taxable income. This is how much you must pay tax on. But then you can go and say, no, wait, you know, I've got these allowances or these expenses that I can claim for running the business. And I've had certain expenses incurred. For example, if I bought plant and machinery now to use for my business, if you're a small business corporation, SARS will say, okay, well, that cost, you don't have to capitalize it and then only claim a percentage of it over a period. You claim all of it in one go, if that fits. And apart from that as well, your wear and tear allowances you like to claim, the rates are a lot more beneficial. So you definitely want to be allowed from that. And apart from that, then depending on where your taxable income sits, you'll pay tax at progressive rates. But you don't automatically pay tax at 28%.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, let's just, for a moment here, let's just talk a little about the whole principle of how you submit and file taxes. I mean, everybody knows, and we talk about the concept of, and it's out there, e-filing.
Yes.
Let's talk about how that works from a practical perspective and what the compliance implications are on e-filing and why people should e-file, what the benefits are. I mean, I know practically from a timing perspective there are some nice benefits. I mean,
definitely.
You talked earlier about when you have to submit a manual VAT return versus, I don't know, e-filing, you can submit a lot later. So
yeah, e-filing would be the last day, manual, for example, the 25th of that month. You got that. Also, it's electronics. It's a lot simpler. You know, you don't have to go to a branch, stand in the queue, you know, it's instantaneous. You actually have control of your tax matters, and you also have all the history in terms of previous returns you've submitted.
Mm-hmm.
So from that side already, it's a big plus.
Okay.
Now, if you're registering for e-filing, the very first time you registered, you would have to go into the branch. You'd have to, in terms of registering, you know, being registered as a taxpayer. But from there, any other tax products you want to use or utilize, let's say, for example, as a business owner, you have to pay for your employees, PAYE. You've got VAT you need to register for, depending if it's applicable. Now, those you can register already for using e-filing. And going through that process on the e-filing platform, certain questions would have to follow, but the process takes about 15 to 20 minutes. Then you registered on e-filing with the various requirements that you've got.
Okay, so e-filing is definitely the way to go for business.
I would recommend it, yes. I've seen before, I know the manual system, I just think also as a business owner, you're so busy running your business, you know, to now go stand in a queue as well at a branch, you know, you just don't, it's not worthwhile, and it's not a worthwhile investment. Yeah. You definitely have electronic and submitted from there, yes.
Okay. Now, Let's just talk about payroll taxes, because I mean those also feature in the bigger tax compliance issue. You've got tax elements for the business, and then you've got tax elements, let's call it, inside, in terms of the people that work inside the business that you need to take care of.
Yes.
I mean, there's the standard PAYE deduction, which you do from your employees. There's UIF, there's skills development levies.
That's right.
Just talk to us a little about how to effectively manage these.
Okay, so first thing I would recommend, right, and also a lot of small business owners think, the payroll I'll just do on an Excel spreadsheet or something. Personally, I recommend spend the time, spend the money, get a reputable software program that's SARS accredited, for example, your Bastille payroll. And also the person administering your payroll, if it's outsourced, if you're just starting out and you have an outsourced FD or FM managing that, utilize them, but make sure that the payroll system's set up correctly and that it's SARS compliant. So you don't have to worry, from that side when the payroll runs that everything's correct. When you submit it, what I would recommend, basically, just to take you through the returns that need to be submitted, you get an EMP 201, which is basically your monthly return. On that monthly return would be the PAYE, UIF, SDL. Then on a biannually basis, you've got your EMP 501. And then on an annual basis, well, another 6 months later, for that 12-month period, you do the last EMP 501. Those are the returns you'd have to submit for your payroll taxes. The payroll taxes, basically, you as the company are a custodian of collecting tax for SARS and then paying it over to SARS on behalf of your employees.
Now, I just want to stop you for a moment and just focus on that choice of words that you've used. It's vital that business owners think about it this way, that you're a custodian of those funds. Because how many times do I hear people saying, oh, we roll our VAT payments and we roll our PAY payments through our cash flow over month end?
Just to build on that as well, what's very important, what the guys don't realize, right, is in terms of, because you're a custodian, so payroll and VAT, SARS is very critical on you as a director personally liable. So even if the company was to close down and there's VAT payments that are outstanding, in your personal capacity, you're still liable. It's not sitting within the company.
Yeah.
And SARS themselves as well, VAT and PAYE, they're very hard on. Make sure those are right. I mean, if you're submitting, and what SARS would also do when you're submitting your annual financial statements, a lot of the times we've seen with clients get a IT-14SD, which is a supplementary declaration. SARS actually has done a reconciliation as a desktop review and said, okay, well, what you've told me previously, the VAT returns you submitted, does it actually comply to your final financial statements? And, that actually exposes you to an audit potentially. Same for PAYE. They'll say, okay, well, the PAYE that you declared and paid over for these employees, does it actually make sense to your payroll taxes that I can see on your financials? So it's definitely on the radar, and I don't think that's anything to mess with for a role at it. Definitely not.
No. Yeah.
And those were the returns that you'd submit on a monthly basis for your employees. The idea is that you're the custodian, so when an employee then submits his own tax return at the end of the year and you've given him an RP5, you've told SARS already, look, this is the PAYE I've deducted. That gets fed into their system. So on their side then, when you as an employee submit your RP5 return and you're doing your annual tax return, SARS already has a record of the PAYE you've paid. Yeah. And that's the main reason in the process behind it, if to explain it that way. Okay. Again, I would recommend e-filing. Register all your employees on e-file, and then from there have the PAYE returns that you need to submit.
Yeah. Now, so skills development levy, UIF, PAYE, are we done?
I'm glad you asked. What's very important, again, this was like, I guess I'm a funny one. I'm passionate about tax, but the reason being is there's a lot of scope actually where you can actually claim back if you just know as a company what's going to help your working capital cycle. On payroll taxes, you get the employment tax incentive. Employment tax incentive was brought in from SARS to help in terms of your youth, to actually get the youth skilled and equipped. So from there, if you have employees that you've employed, which are between 18 and 29 years old, and it's a salary between 2,000 Rand and 6,000 Rand, that PAYE you pay back, or you pay over to SARS. SARS pays you actually a portion back, if I can put it that way. So it's a PAYE refund or recoupment, to explain it simply. And SARS actually helps you in terms of that way, if you've employed these individuals, to actually help yourself out as well in terms of keeping the business going. Okay. The second one as well is if you've got learners that you've employed, 12 capital H, you get a lot of learnership allowances you can actually claim if these learners are accredited with the CETA and they're employed by you in terms of a learnership agreement. Those allowances you can claim back from SARS. And, per learner, you're looking at between 30,000 Rand. If it's a person with a disability, it's 50,000 Rand per annum. And I mean, this is a lot of money for a business, especially a small to medium-sized entity starting out. But again, just to come back to our very first point, make sure you speak to the right people when you start out. You know, make sure you have the right guys in your corner so that you get this money back that's available. The thing is, your SaaS doesn't have a button when you submit your tax return as a company to say, oh, yeah, remember, you must claim the learnership allowance or you must claim the ETI, the employment tax incentive. But these things are there and are available to actually help out.
So, I mean, if I look at that, the one thing that comes to mind is the fact that you need to know and understand what your tax position is. Let's call it vanilla.
Yes.
And then you need to know and understand all the different tax breaks that you can get as a company. And you almost need to have a bit of a laundry list as an entity and say, do we qualify for this? Do we qualify for that? And make sure you test each one, because you may find yourself in a situation where you do or don't qualify for something specifically.
Yes.
And it might change year to year.
It might, and I think you'd be pleasantly surprised in some instances. You know, I think this is one situation where you actually do want to go through the laundry list, whether it's with your auditor, with the individual reviewing your financials, or your tax practitioner that you've got, you know, assisting you. Okay. Definitely sit with those individuals, do some tax planning up front, and, you know, have a look at this on an annual basis. It's not just a grudge purchase. There's actually a lot of room where you can actually help your business out if you're proactive about it.
Okay, so we're now coming up to we are in the month of August.
Okay.
And I know that at the end of August, there's this beautiful thing called provisional tax.
Yeah, we're in it at the moment.
In fact, I'm quite surprised you're actually on the show today. I thought you would be buried in provisional tax return computations. What is provisional tax? What is that about? How does that interact with the company? Why do you need to do it? Let's take people through what the thinking is behind provisional tax.
My pleasure. Provisional tax is, it's not a separate tax. I think the guys think, you know, it's an additional tax like VAT or PAYE, which is not the instance. Mm. What it really is as a business or as an individual, you need to pay your annual tax return or your annual tax submission. However, you know, to make sure you don't have a big tax liability at the end of the year, SARS has basically gone and said, look, I want to make sure you pay your tax provisionally. So pay tax within 6 months. Then at the end of the year, pay the remaining 6 months tax amount that you've got.
So it's almost like an installment. So you pay your first installment, your second installment, and then any kind of top up, etc.
There we go. Exactly
now,
that.
The one thing that I do know from having looked at this myself is that there's this lovely new little rider that's kind of appeared in the last, I don't know when it appeared, but I know it's been there for a while, that you have to get your estimate fairly accurate and
within 80%. So your second estimate must be within 80% of the total liability.
Or you've got a problem.
Well, you've got penalties again. You're on interest in the estimation.
Now, obviously, that's quite a tall order. If you're not up to date with your numbers, if you haven't done your numbers correctly, etc.
Right, yes.
So it's really important. Now you don't have that problem with the first payment, am I right?
It comes within the second one.
So you have an opportunity to estimate with a little bit more leniency around the first payment.
Yeah.
But the second payment, you've got to get to within 80% of the number or you're going to run into some challenges.
Yes.
Now, what that means is that you have to have a handle on your management accounts. You need to know exactly what sort of numbers you're producing every month.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is, by the time you get to the end of February, you're going to be expected to put in that second provisional payment. And if you don't know where you are, for example, at the end of January, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to have a problem estimating your February numbers and then kind of a year-to-date picture and getting that right.
Yes.
So I'm seeing a very strong connection here between provisional taxes, for example, and understanding your management accounts or your accounting.
Well, the two are interrelated. I mean, they're vital because, you know, as a business owner as well, you want to know where you're going in the next 12 months, you know, what's your working capital like, and in terms of what your tax liability is going to be at the end of that year. You know, you should have a very good idea in terms of where your taxable income and your profits are sitting. And definitely those two are very closely related. Look at your management accounts, make sure they're assessed. Also, from a SaaS perspective as well, you need to have detailed records for 5 years. Okay. So, you know, those records are vital. So, again, what you were saying earlier, make sure you have the right guys on the bus. In terms of the right team that's in your corner and assessing if your management accounts are right and your estimates forward are right, those records, for example, your fixed asset registers, your annual stock takes that they've done, you know, your income and expense records, make sure those are all right, so you can forward estimate in terms of provisional taxes, mm-hmm. and then also that you have your management accounts to see, like, you know, in the next 12 months, where's the company going to go? What's my cash flow projections as well? And build tax in as a cash flow projector. I think a lot of people, because SaaS is this boogeyman, you know, you feel like that's a great purchase. I don't really want to worry about tax. I wish I could just submit null returns. But I think you've got to be realistic about it. Include it as part of your cash flow budgeting and see where you're actually going to be paying tax. And, you know, also where there's opportunities to actually reduce your tax liability.
Now, I mean, you talked about record keeping now, a 5-year requirement for your basic records, etc. Are there any other, I mean, the simple rule, keep it for 5 years from the time you were last assessed. So if you were assessed 2 years, you know, if you're 2 years behind, that means you've got a 7-year record retention requirement effectively.
Yeah, I would say that's basically what
you said. So you want to make sure that you're keeping your 5 years plus however far back you potentially are. And let's be real, the reality is there are companies that are behind in terms of assessment and that needs to be taken care of.
Yeah.
Now, I want to just cover this principle, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask this question about the good old VAT scenario, because I think VAT is something that catches everybody sometimes a little, I wouldn't say unawares, everybody knows it's there, but when do you have to register for VAT? When's that compulsory level?
Compulsory is if you're making taxable supplies, basically just in simple terms, your sales of R1 million or more.
Okay, so R1 million or more, you're going to find yourself in a space where you...
Compulsory registration.
You can register if you're lower than that, but you also, from what I understand, have to make sure that you can, let's call it, substantiate why you want to be VAT registered.
Substantiate, and also basically sales of about R50,000. So 50,000 or more, then the voluntary registration kicks in, compulsory R1 million or more.
Okay. Now, once you're registered, you get put onto a VAT cycle. I mean, we talk of, and there's this 2-month VAT cycle often that runs.
Yeah.
What puts you onto which cycle? Is it just merely an allocation that they do?
No, it depends basically on the volume of sales, if I can put it that way. Mm-hmm. So if you're R1 million or more, you're going to be submitting monthly. Lower, you're going to have, you know, bi-monthly. Basically, SARS is looking, saying, like, if your sales are that significant, or your VAT that you're paying over is that significant, monthly we want to know, and you have to pay over as a custodian on a monthly basis the VAT that's due to the government.
Okay.
Whereas if it's in a lower amount, bi-monthly... would be applicable in terms of that instance.
Would be applicable, okay. Now, obviously, there is high risk if you're on a bi-monthly payment profile that you bill, you collect the VAT, and then you sit with the VAT for a period of 45 days, however long it may be, before it gets paid over.
Yeah.
And that's where the temptation to dip into the cash flow often arises.
Yes. Okay. And don't do it. I can honestly say.
I love your focus. Don't do it.
I know it's tempting, but you know, especially as a small business owner, but it's not worth it. You know, I've seen court cases as well, and in recent media terms as well, there was a high profile VAT case where, in terms of fraudulent VAT claims that were submitted in Cape Town, you know, and that taxpayer has gotten into a lot of trouble. Don't do it. You know.
Okay. Now, you talk about, and in closing, I want to cover this. You talk about the taxpayer. Who's the representative taxpayer for the company? Who gets to wear the yellow or the orange jumpsuit and go and play in a closed concrete area?
Yeah. And we all feel very sorry for him from the business. Well, representative taxpayer gets appointed.
Okay.
So if you, as a board of directors, would decide, like, this is the generally be your prescribed officer. Mm-hmm. So a prescribed officer would be like, okay, well, he's the representative taxpayer. And then, represent as you being registered as a resident of taxpayer, the very first time you'd have to go into the SARS branch as well, have your ID, show also, you know, in terms of the fact that you've been appointed as a representative taxpayer by the board, and have the proof of approval, the proof that that's been minuted, that you actually have been appointed as a representative taxpayer for the company. In terms of your e-filing profile, then you would be a representative taxpayer, and in any dealings with SARS, that would be the person you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
You can also, it doesn't necessarily have to be someone within the company. You could also say, look, you want to have your tax practitioner be your representative taxpayer.
But I would be worried if I was that person. Great. Gavin, thank you for your time. We really appreciate your insights.
No, it's been lovely being on you. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much. So that was Gavin Voss from Nolans in Johannesburg joining us to talk about tax and regulatory compliance. Just a reminder, if you want to join our live studio audience, you can email kevin@leadershipplatform.com. That's double P in the middle, leadershipplatform.com. Next up, we're going to get a little bit more practical with our SME development conversation.
This is CliffCentral.com.